You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV Plus.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Caroline Hyde and Ed Ludlow.
I'm Caroline Hyde of Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology.
Coming up, divest or ban legislation. It clears the House and it heads to the Senate. That's this week. TikTok, it prepares to take this to the courts and exhaust all legal fights. We'll have full coverage ahead.
Plus, we take a deep dive into Tesla as chaos erupts internally and Elon Musk shifts the company's focus from a cheaper model to the robotaxi. We'll bring you the findings from our Bloomberg Big Take.
And Salesforce's talks with Informatica, they fizzle as the companies struggle to agree on terms of a deal, all according to sources. We'll discuss that and so much more throughout this hour. But first,
the other big story we're tracking is the passage of the ban or divest TikTok bill on the Hill. We passed the House over the weekend. The expectation is it will pass the Senate in the coming days. Bloomberg intelligence analysts, our in-house researchers, saying there's a 90% chance it will go through the Senate and be passed into law. These are the publicly traded social media names. Some downward pressure on names like Meta and Snap, Alphabet, parent of Google, a little higher, but I'm thinking, of course, about YouTube. The landscape for social media in this country is front and center this week, Caroline.
And also what's happening abroad, the EU opening a new investigation into TikTok as well. We're reporting all of this as you just really focus on what's happening in the US, Ed. In the coming days, the Senate expected to vote on that legislation requiring TikTok's Chinese parent company ByteDance to divest its ownership stake in the app. President Joe Biden has said, look, he'd sign that legislation pretty promptly if it gets through. For more, let's bring in Bloomberg's Alex Barinka. It's been a busy weekend and looks as though this is kind of a done deal now.
It does. This bill passing seems almost inevitable. The Senate is expected to take it up this week. President Joe Biden has said he will sign it immediately. And TikTok inside is already scrambling. Over the weekend, after the bill passage on Saturday, we broke the news that the general counsel in the U.S. for TikTok and ByteDance, Eric Anderson, who's been in charge of convincing the National Security Interagency Committee that TikTok's doing enough to prevent any user data from getting to China, is actually being pushed out of his role. So the changes are happening internally. The company is also sending memos to its employees promising that if this bill passes this week, that will not be the end of the story. ByteDance and TikTok both intend to fight this to every extent of the legal battles possible before considering any kind of divestiture or separation from TikTok's Chinese parent company, ByteDance.
I talked at the beginning of the show about the BI or Bloomberg Intelligence assessment of whether or not this will pass through the Senate and be passed into law, 90%. Their other piece of analysis is that if there were to be a legal challenge by TikTok and its US users, they assign a 70% chance that the US government would be successful in court. Over the weekend, we also had a lot of kind of internal news at TikTok. What else have you reported, Alex?
Well, those pressures on the legal side, you know, it's interesting to see those numbers. There are a number of kind of legal avenues that TikTok might take. We saw them when the state of Montana looked to ban the app, stand behind a number of users who actually sued. There might also be folks like small businesses or other organizations who feel like they're being harmed. So certainly the pressure is on here in the U.S. And then just this morning, Ed, as Caroline mentioned, the European Union opened a new probe into whether ByteDance violated the bloc's new contract. content law when it launched an app called TikTok Lite app in France and Spain without providing a full risk assessment. So if you're internal at TikTok right now, you are not only dealing with this inevitable passage of the bill that, BI, Bloomberg Intelligence, puts at 90% passage, you're also having to fend off continued pushes for fines, scrutiny over privacy, and again, just the intense, unprecedented attention that this move by U.S. Congress has made and perhaps has gotten lawmakers in other geographies thinking, if the U.S. is doing something like this, should we be taking a closer look?
Bloomberg's Alex Barinka, literally minute by minute reporting on this. It's been a busy weekend. It will be a busy week for you. Let's keep the conversation going. Bring in Rachel Tippograph, the founder and CEO of Micmac, an e-commerce marketing platform for multi-channel brands. You understand the entire lens here, the user's interest in TikTok, the potential of TikTok in this country in the e-commerce context, and the competition out there. I talked about the chances of this bill passing. I believe you see it passing as well.
Absolutely. It'll be the big news headline this week that the ban will likely happen. But we at Micmac don't believe that this is the end of the story. TikTok has become one of the most powerful platforms in the world. At Micmac, on any given day, we now see TikTok as our second most trafficked platform. Meta being number one, TikTok being number two. We have to remember, TikTok didn't enter the cultural zeitgeist until 2019. And fast forward today, it has leapfrogged YouTube, Snap, Pinterest, and of course X in terms of brand investment and traffic. So we don't believe this will be the end of TikTok. TikTok will absolutely fight this the way that they did with Trump in 2020 and Montana last year. That will then create some time for a divestiture to really come to life. And why wouldn't Salesforce or Microsoft or Adobe or Walmart, Amazon or Meta make a land grab for this?
Because,
50% of Americans,
Rachel,
use TikTok.
Well, the reason they might not is because China won't let them. We've also got to factor in the fact that China might not sell it, or indeed they wouldn't let the access to the technology. But let's go with the fact that maybe they are able to buy it here in the US. I'm just interested, amidst this uncertainty, because they still got a year, if this goes past the Senate, they then got a year to sell themselves. Do any of your 1,200 brands that use you, that come through you, start to pull back on their investment in TikTok, do you think, at all?
You know, this has been a part of the dialogue for the past year, that a ban could happen. And for some of the advertisers, we've seen a slight pause. That being said, TikTok traffic at Micmac has grown 40% year over year. So by and large, we continue to see Fortune 1000 brands invest in the platform. And not only are they investing it from an advertising standpoint, they're starting to invest in it in terms of a standalone commerce channel, now with the advent of TikTok shops. So we're not seeing brands pull back, but the reality is, with advertising, it's very easy to turn on and off. Mm. We saw this happen with Meta, with YouTube, with X. And so brands have options. If they choose not to invest in TikTok, they're going to reallocate spend to other social channels, as well as programmatic like the Trade Desk or CTV like Roku. So I'm not overly worried in terms of what will happen in the advertising landscape. There's plenty of options for brands to drive reach, awareness, and conversion.
There's the advertising side of the equation. There's the eyeballs. And it was interesting that over the weekend, Elon Musk, the CEO of X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, gave his opinion that TikTok should not be banned in the USA, even though such a ban may benefit his own platform, X. Therein lies the value of it. You talked about the e-commerce side, but for me, the thing we never talk about that much is 50% almost of all Americans use TikTok. That is scale that many other platforms don't have.
Absolutely. I mean, it's why TikTok is now our second most trafficked channel at Micmac. Meta is number one. There's very few places for you to reach all U.S. American households. And so to reach 50% of them with essentially one ad buy on TikTok is extremely powerful. And per Musk, I mean, we're talking about setting a precedent that really interferes with the First Amendment, which is why at Micmac we believe that if things can play out, a divestiture is most likely the best outcome for everyone. ByteDance might not see it that way, but in terms of the U.S. government, if I were them, I would be pushing for a divestiture.
I don't think ByteDance would see it that way, no. A second ago, I actually misspoke. I said that Elon Musk was the CEO of X. He's not. Linda Yaccarino is. But given the last 7 days that I've had and the number of companies that Elon Musk is CEO of, I think the world will forgive me. Rachel Tippograph of Micmac, thank you very much for your analysis. Now, coming up, internal chaos at Tesla, where Elon Musk is CEO, yes, and he's shifting his focus from a cheaper model to the robo-taxi. We put a really important piece out last night in the Bloomberg Big Take, and that's coming up next. Carrie.
So well read. Brilliant reporting. Meanwhile, let's just dig into what was also happening on Friday. Remember when NVIDIA was down 10%? It lost more than $200 billion in market capitalization. Today, it's up, but only 1.3%. We're actually fading some of that rally in this big tech and AI play. This is Bloomberg Technology.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
A Bloomberg Big Take. Tesla consumed by chaos amid CEO Elon Musk's shift of a focus from new cheaper models to clearly a robotaxi. And Caroline, what we tried to do was clarify what's going on. Mm. And my understanding is this is Elon Musk. He's come back in and said, yes, robotaxi is the focus. A cheaper EV is not completely scrapped, but it is confusing. You've read the Big Take. I don't know. Did we give you some clarity on where we stand?
You did. You really just highlighted how much, perhaps, we've seen a reorientation of Elon Musk back on the Tesla business, back in demon mode for all the pros and the cons that gives. I mean, in particular, you articulate so well some of the negatives that have been felt by people let go at the company.
I think one really clear thing is that loads of executives at Tesla said, Elon, please do the $25,000 EV, do it cheap. Elon said, no, we are doing robo-taxi, and there's a difference of philosophy, but the cheap part is misunderstood. It's not cancelled or scrapped. It just looks different to what we thought. So a lot to discuss.
Yeah, the fact that basically it can be rolled out. This is a cheaper model for other purposes, a more broadly, more wide-reaching company that ultimately investors are trying to get their hands around, and share prices reflect that. Craig Trudell, who has been helping edit this beautiful creation that Ed Ludlow and Tanner Hull have put together over this weekend. Craig, your key takeaway, and I think for many investors is right now, what are the priorities? And that's it. The priority right now is robo-taxi, but for a greater good, for a broader, cheaper offering.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with some of our colleagues at BNEF, and I think, you know, the idea that maybe what Elon may make the case to Wall Street tomorrow is, we already have a $25,000 car. He will be spinning when he says that. But when you sort of take into account gas savings and tax credits and so on and so forth, you know, the Model 3 after the price cuts of the last year plus is getting pretty darn close to that. And so, you know, I think that what we'll see from Tesla in the months to come is this attempt to kind of, you know, further emphasize the value that they're offering with the Model 3 and the Model Y. per Ed's reporting, you know, apply some of the work that's going into the platform that they want to use to underpin the robo-taxi to bring the Model 3 and Model Y costs down even further. I think the real question is whether or not that's going to cut it for Wall Street.
Yeah.
Because they want to see some new products.
You know, we tried to give some clarity on that. We tried to give some clarity on the layoffs. And the way that one source put it to me is deliveries were down 20% sequentially in the first quarter. So Musk turned around to the other bosses and said, if deliveries are down 20%, let's just cut headcount 20%. Not for any reason to do with cost saving necessarily, but this is like the Elon Musk playbook, Craig, right? And when you edited the big take, I hope that you got the sense that this is Elon Musk pulling the strings on this.
Yeah, you know, and it takes me back a little bit to the Walter Isaacson biography where, you know, I feel like the word delete was in that book, you know, at least 50 times in terms of, you know, whenever, you know, Tesla or SpaceX or these various companies that he runs, you know, run into trouble, he just comes in and wants to cut everything and get rid of everything and question why, you know, companies are doing things, building things. Why do we need that part or component, or why are we doing this process? I think the question is, you know, whether he's sort of cut to the bone here. And, you know, we're even sort of seeing some questioning of whether or not he's effectively doing that in these price cuts over the weekend, whether there are going to be any earnings left in China, you know, in terms of how far they've gone with the Model 3 and the Model Y in that market.
Ed, I mean, the key point here, Craig, is we all think about this bigger picture and then look ahead to the micro. Less, little over 24 hours, Ed, we get the earnings.
Yeah, I mean, just shout out to Craig and to Dana. In 24 hours, we will have earnings bingo again. And we'll find out on what I would say is probably one of the most important earnings statements and calls in Tesla's history, because investors just want some clarity on what the strategy is. Craig, in one word or one sentence, what are you watching for?
I just as much hype around AI and full self-driving as we can possibly imagine. I think that's the expectation. Cool. Because there aren't many other cards to play.
Craig Trudell, brilliant editing throughout this weekend on some much important reporting. Thank you. Let's get into those earnings and more broadly across the tech sector. Megan Horniman, CIO at Verdance Capital Advisors. I understand Verdance Capital Advisors does have some exposure to Tesla. And more broadly, have you felt that the market has priced in some of the worst here for a business like Tesla, for some of the less than magnificent seven?
I think from, you know, broadly speaking, I still think there's some downside, specifically because some of these stocks, Tesla included, have been really driven by momentum. It's been a pretty big decline that we've seen in Tesla, but the clarity's not there. Broadly speaking, from the Magnificent Seven, you know, this earnings season, they have a lot to prove. Mm. Valuations are very elevated. And if we don't see this come through from an earnings perspective, I think there's more downside and a little bit more of a valuation correction.
What I love about your notes, your analysis, Megan, is just how deep you go and sort of ultimately how powerful and encompassing those Magnificent Seven players have been. I read in your note that in fact, five of the Magnificent Seven companies, so you're talking Nvidia, Amazon, Meta, Alphabet, and Microsoft, have expected to be the top five contributors to year-on-year earnings growth for the S&P. Basically, if they don't give us what we need, earnings are more broadly going to fall across the rest of the S&P. Mm-hmm.
No, they'll definitely be, I think, a lot weaker than the anticipation right now. And the anticipation is only for about 0.5% year-over-year earnings growth. So there's a lot riding on these Magnificent Seven. I think that's also why you're seeing the markets, they're kind of moving, they're up a little bit today, but moving sideways. They're going to wait for they're waiting for earnings. They're also waiting from an economic standpoint, the PCE that we get later this week, personal income and spending, and then that first read on GDP for the first quarter.
Megan, good morning. It's Ed in San Francisco. There's a UBS note this morning doing the rounds. A lot of people are talking about it, and they've cut their view on the big six to neutral from overweight. But they're basically saying tough comps this quarter. And I think that they're kind of suggesting that if you go away from the big six or Mag 7, whatever you want to call it, there is some other technology out there. There are other corners of the market to play in. Do you share that thesis?
Yes, absolutely. You know, these stocks have had a great run, but they have to now, as we mentioned, the valuations are very high, and people are looking for outside of that to make money. Not just in the large cap space, but I think if you look in the small and mid cap space, I think there's a little bit more value there. They haven't participated in this rally in the large cap space, and if you look from a long term perspective, from a valuation standpoint, they're historically cheap versus the S&P 500. They're in the same boat though, from an earnings perspective, that there's a lot of uncertainty around earnings in the next couple quarters. But if you can withstand that volatility and look longer term, these may be some opportunities in the market.
Megan, there is quite a lot riding on earnings, I feel like, this season. And lots of people say, well, if earnings don't deliver for us, particularly on the Big Six, Mag 7, then tech will fall away and the market will go with it. We like drama on the show, okay? But realistically, how worried are you about the stakes in the coming weeks?
I'm quite worried. We had a little bit more than a 5% correction in the markets over the past couple weeks. That was not enough, in my opinion, to really warrant these, to look at these elevated valuations, and then also take all of these mounting risks that we have from an economics standpoint, from a geopolitical standpoint, from a Federal Reserve standpoint. I think there still is a little bit too much optimism about what the Federal Reserve can do. And our bigger risk here is, what is inflation going to do? Are we really in the midst of a reignition, I guess you could say, of inflation? If that's the case, these stocks and these earnings expectations and these valuations are just not sustainable.
Megan Horniman of Verdant Capital Advisors, really appreciate your time on the show.
Time now for Talking Tech. First up, calls are growing for a crackdown on X over in Australia after two knife attacks have occurred in Sydney over the past 10 days alone. Now, graphic content from the stabbings as well as misinformation spread quickly as both attacks unfolded. And that's now prompted five government ministers to consider bringing in tougher laws for social media companies. Plus, Tencent shares, well, they've staged a big rally since December. And now we know that China's biggest internet firm has just nailed down an earlier than anticipated debut of its mobile game, Dungeon & Fighter Mobile. It's a marquee title expected to refresh an aging pipeline and draw in new users, so shares ticked higher that much more. And Japan's antitrust regulator has its eyes on Google. This after it says the tech giant used tactics that limited Yahoo Japan's ability to compete in targeted search ads. Now, the watchdog says that Google's parent Alphabet changed its conduct as soon as they flagged the practice, but we'll keep on monitoring this US firm.
Apple's next big thing is a push into on-device large language models. Apple's been working on several major projects for years, including home robots, foldable iPads, and augmented reality glasses. But the biggest and most important project coming this year is a push into generative AI. Apple's approach will be a little bit different than the competition, like Google, OpenAI, and Meta. Instead of powering Gen AI on cloud-based servers, the functions will work on the iPhone itself using the on-device software, processors, and other chips. That makes it quicker, more secure, and Apple believes more functional and more accurate. With iOS 18 coming in September, after being introduced in June at the Worldwide Developers Conference, Apple plans to include a slew of new AI features that will help users in their daily lives. I'm Mark Gurman. This is Power On.
Okay, let's get a check-in on the markets. And one asset I guess we haven't talked much about is Bitcoin. We sent the headline 5 p.m. Pacific on April 19. The halving has occurred. And as such, it cuts in half the rewards that are paid to miners. 24/7 we trade in Bitcoin. So we're at 65,000, 66,000 US dollars per token right now. Where we're seeing a more pronounced, delayed, I suppose, reaction to the halving is in those assets that do not trade 24/7. In other words, the US traded equities or stocks that are crypto linked. Coinbase is off its session highs, but have been up 7%. Riot, another blockchain related platform, up 9%. Some names moving to the downside. Marathon Digital Holdings down 3.9%. There was a headline on the Terminal Caroline that the halving was a bit of a limp. But as you know, I think we should be excited about it. I think there's still a lot to discuss.
There were still parties, virtual or in real life. I want to know how many of those invites you went to, Ed. But one person hosting one of those halving parties was Chris Klein, Bitcoin IRA COO and co-founder for this and so much more. So the hype, you watched it happen when it occurred on Friday night. But now the reality, and what's interesting is, you know, maybe there are certain players miners out there now that don't get rewarded as much. Maybe we see an impact on the share price, but ultimately this is meant to drive the increase of Bitcoin prices. Will it?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And yeah, we had some good parties last week for the halving. You're right, it does punish the producers of the asset class. You will see, I saw headlines this morning that it came off with a whimper. That's pretty typical for halving events. It's usually 3 to 6 months where you start seeing some impacts of that supply constraint that takes place.
Supply constraint has not yet taken place. I actually want to focus on that for a minute because I think you guys had a pretty good quarter.
Yes.
And actually, since the start of the year, whether you are focused on the underlying technology or you're a participant in the marketplace for crypto-related assets, things have been quite cheery. Put that into context for us. As everyone was bracing for the halving, they were also doing business and carrying on with it.
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of interesting. You expect this like big Times Square event where everything changes, like the year has turned over. And in reality, it's just we've hit another block, the next 210,000th block, in which it's in our code, it's in our DNA to cut the rewards and then limit that supply. This is not happening in a vacuum either. So you've got ETFs that are taking a lion's share of these things right now. We have a few billion dollars of assets, clients, or client assets under custody inside of our platform. And there'll be more and more when less and less is available, which is really in contrast to the almighty dollar and the way the US dollar works today. We actually reward producers of currency every 4 years with things called re-elections, right?
That I get the parallel of. We have a big part of our audience that are focused on largely the blockchain, right? They probably don't care about any given direction of the movement in Bitcoin or its current price. But there is now a big market of people that do.
Yes.
And many of them argue because of the finite supply, and I'm repeating myself to audience, we always talk about this, but Bitcoin can only ever go up in price because of that limited
supply. Because of that scarcity.
Yeah. And yet, the other story of the first quarter was liquidity. This is quite a liquid market.
Yes.
Where a lot of trades hands. How do we square those two?
How do you square that with liquidity is a difficult question. Probably bigger nerds that can handle that for you. But don't forget the divisibility of Bitcoin. It's not, you don't trade in one Bitcoin. It goes down to the 11th decimal point, which is known as a Satoshi. And as we get further and further down that scarcity, you're going to start seeing the impact where people will be, wow, you're a one Bitcoiner. And that will be a huge deal. I think it also, you can't have this conversation about Bitcoin having without talking about inflation. They're very intertwined today. I was reading a study this morning. Northwest Mutual came out. Average Americans think they need $1.5 million in order to retire comfortably, which is a pretty large number. However, what's really staggering is that just 3 years ago, the same report was at $950,000. So in just 3 years, Americans feel like they need 53% more money to retire comfortably. And that's part of why folks are looking at diversification of currency. And Bitcoin is an opportunity for that.
And look, you're looking at what we're saving for our pensions and for our retirement a little bit more because you've got it in your name, Bitcoin IRA. You don't just offer Bitcoin, you offer other cryptocurrencies, but more broadly at the moment, this coming of an ETF was meant to tempt in the so-called boomers to get them back into allocating to and attempted to allocate into Bitcoin. But what about the rest of the altcoins and how are you seeing interest pick up as we start to talk more of an ETH ETF too?
Yeah, the ETH ETF is starting to get some buildup. We should maybe expect that later this year. I don't get excited because I waited 7 years for the Bitcoin ETF to get approved. But there are a slew of coins, thousands of them. On our platform, there's about 65 different coins that are available or currencies available today. And they're all serve different utilities. Ethereum is really the backbone of the future of the web or internet, as we can think of it, which is designed for smart contracts. Actually, I wish my 10-year-old daughter was here. She was on a podcast with me last week. And she has one-word associations for these. Bitcoin is money, Ethereum is contracts, Ripple is banks, and Litecoin is her favorite shopping.
I actually think that the huge body of our audience get that, and they appreciate just simplifying things a little bit. Chris Klein, Bitcoin IRA CEO and co-founder, it's great to have you on the program here in San Francisco. Thank you. Let's talk about the entertainment industry. I chatted with Kevin Mayer, former CEO of TikTok and former Disney chairman. And we talked about, you guessed it, TikTok's troubles, but also Disney's leadership, two big stories in that world of late. He's also the co-CEO of Candle Media, which owns CoComelon creator Moonbug Entertainment. So I had to ask him if we should expect more coming from the company's smash hit children's series. Listen to this.
We are planning a movie that hasn't been, I don't think, officially announced, actually, but there's a movie coming up, hopefully, that will be either theatrically released or be on a streaming service. I'm thinking it could be theatrically released, and that would be great. That's probably in 2 years. We'll have a CoComelon movie. And you're right about licensing and merchandising. When you have the reach and depth of engagement that we have with our properties, with kids and their parents, by the way, there's a huge amount of co-viewing of CoComelon and our other properties. Something like 40% of all views are also seen by a parent, and we've done the work to know that for sure. That does lend itself to developing a whole set of licensed properties that are based on that character. Toys, t-shirts, soft lines, bedroom accoutrements, all the stuff you'd expect. We're in all of it.
Kevin, you've mentioned it several times over the course of the conversation. I'm sure it's come up at Jefferies, and it's a big part of your history and your present. It's Disney. Who do you think should be the next CEO of Disney? And I'll jump in and ask if you'd throw your own hat into that ring.
Well, I'm pretty busy. I have a tech fund that I'm working with. I'm a co-founder of. I have Candle Media. I'm doing some other stuff. And Disney has a very, very solid set of leaders below Bob. So they have a great bench. They have people that have been there a long time that really understand the Disney culture, the value and prominence and dynamism of brands. And I think most likely they'll go internal and they have candidates that I think are wonderful. So that's where I think it's going to go. And my hat, I have not tossed my hat in the ring, actually. So, you know, I'm doing my thing at this point.
There are many streaming platforms to choose from. You kind of summed it there. One of the names you didn't mention, for example, was Paramount Plus, and Peacock is one that I think about a lot. Is there a world in which all of these survive independently, or do you see some consolidation? And I know you must get asked that all the time by the financial press or financial networks like ours. But again, I point to the idea you're sat on the other side of the table, the content creator, and you've got some power and interest in where it's distributed.
Look, I don't know what the future of Paramount Plus and Peacock are. Obviously, I don't have a crystal ball. I do think that there's a scale issue with them. I do believe not every single studio can have an associated streaming service that has the same prospects as a Disney or as a Max or as a Netflix or Amazon for that matter. I left those out, but that's obviously been a huge player, as is Apple TV Plus. I do think consolidation is inevitable. You know, that is just natural economics 101. When an industry start off and everything's about growth and cost of capital was very inexpensive back when Netflix started the ball rolling. I think that there was very free access to capital and a lot of patience on behalf of investors. And I think as the industries mature and as you're starting to penetrate more households and as natural, you know, growth starts to level off, always consolidation happens. And then you have to start focusing on costs and cost synergies and the synergies inherent in possibly in mergers and the like. And I think that is a natural course for any growth sector to evolve into. And I think that's what you're saying in streaming. It will happen there too.
Kevin, I'm pushing my luck here. I'm being told that we got to go, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about TikTok. Just your assessment, having been inside and now on the outside, of what you think will happen. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but you know, the political will is to a divestiture of US ops, and TikTok seems to think that domiciling US user data in US-based servers is the answer.
It's hard for me to call. I haven't been at TikTok for several years now, so I'm just observing it the way everyone else is observing it at this point. I will say this about TikTok. It's a great team. It's an independent company. Although it is Chinese, it is not, you know, as far as I know, run by the government in China or anything else. I don't know. I'm not familiar with all the different security concerns that our government may or may not have. But I do know that the folks that I dealt with at TikTok were high quality people. The product is obviously super impressive and engaging and has taken over large parts of the media and social media landscapes already. I don't know what's going to happen. It does seem to be bipartisan, more so than most issues these days. So it's going to be interesting. I hope the right thing happens there.
That was Candle Media co-CEO Kevin Mayer. Caroline.
What a wide-ranging conversation. Brilliant, Ed. Meanwhile, though, look, we've got to switch gears because it's Earth Day. Happy Earth Day. So let's take this opportunity to look at the latest world of climate tech in venture capital. We're very pleased to bring in Siam Capital founder and managing partner, Sita Chandraman Klasari, on today's VC Spotlight. Sustainability as a service. What is that? That is your ethos. That is your underpinning. What does sustainability as a service look like?
It's a great question. I think I'd probably first dissect the question around sustainability because there's so much public rhetoric right now around what it actually means. So we are trying to tackle how do we produce more or the same with less? Mm-hmm. And there's new technologies that are trying to combat this. But the way that we think about it is like, how can we invest in consumption infrastructure, in the picks and shovels, in supply chain software, in new data platforms that really allows us to be much more sustainable in an economic way? So that's sort of why we landed on this coined term, if you will, the new SaaS or sustainability as a service.
You've been raising money, and for as someone who's leading it as GP, still a lot of money from the fund to allocate. So tell me, 50 million, where are the priorities to be putting money to, where you can make the most impact from how I basically interact with the climate as a capitalist?
It's a great question. We're still investing out of our first fund, but we're actually really focused on our second fund right now. And the ethos is very
similar. And
how big
is that second fund?
Our second fund target is 80.
Great.
The thing that I think a lot of consumers struggle with is like, how can you really capitalize on your individual purchases or your individual activities, if you will? And one of the things we always come back to is that sustainable solutions are not really long-term sustainable if they're not cost-effective and if they don't really inhibit the consumer's life that drastically on a day-to-day. Because at the end of the day, I mean, we're sitting in a Bloomberg office. We live in a capitalist society. So we need to focus on investments, and we need to focus on solutions that don't totally change the way that we behave, at least not so drastically.
I've got to get a flight still, for example.
Exactly. And it's a lot of the times as an investor, we're thinking about how do we evaluate businesses that are a lot more practical, that aren't necessarily from the echo chambers of you need to be net zero tomorrow. So that's really where we're sort of leaning our biases these days.
Sita, we've done a lot of reporting on the program about funds, new funds that are focused on manufacturing, industrial funds, but they have the same thesis. Just very specifically, what's the opportunity for you? Is it on something tangible, hardware, or are you also looking at software application as well?
We're definitely looking across both areas, but our personal bias is towards the latter. I mean, to be very frank, the genesis of the fund really started because we felt like while there was a lot of capital being deployed into the broad climate crisis or the sustainability transition, from a sheer volume standpoint, the vast majority of this capital was going into hard assets, long duration, if you will, slightly riskier bets. And while that's a super noble ambition, if you will, and I'm so happy to know that the funding is out there for those initiatives. At the end of the day, this transition is not going to happen just because we have these decade-defining technologies. We also need the picks and shovels, sort of the point I was making earlier around really software that will actually connect the dots between the new technologies that exist and the end user, be it the consumer or businesses. So we have a strong bias towards really investing in these slightly more scalable, slightly more asset light, much more software focused opportunities.
What is the pitch then to LPs? Very quickly, just how do you sell it to them, the vision?
I'm probably going to stay away from that just because we try to keep those conversations in private, but also more so, it really depends on what your perspective is on the transition. But our stance is very much that, you know, over our lifetime, one of the greatest transitions or one of the greatest problems, if you will, is this sustainability transition. But as a function of that, it's also one of the greatest wealth creation opportunities. And we need to be able to find ways in which we can invest in that transition in a much more asset-light way, in a way that is a little bit more tangible. And sort of to go back to our thesis a little bit, or to answer Caroline's first question as well around consumers, you know, in the U.S. where we sit, and this is also pretty akin to a lot of developed countries, the biggest shareholder of the economy are the biggest stakeholders are consumers. We hold over 70% of the GDP. So on aggregate, this is a massive moving power mechanism. And consumers, if we're forced to change every facet of our lives, what we do, how we spend our time, how we move, it forces businesses to also change the way they do business. And that really is the essence of how we think about the space.
And talking about how you move, that's why you're in companies like Cowboy, Tomorrow Farms, How We Eat, How We Consume. Sime Capital founder and managing partner, great to have you with us. Thank you so much, Sita Chandramon-Klesari. Ed, what have we got coming up?
Another big story, and they keep coming. Salesforce talks with Informatica fizzle out. In fact, there ain't no talks at all. We'll talk about those details next. This is Bloomberg Technology.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Data management company Informatica said it's not engaged in takeover talks following reports that discussions with Salesforce had cooled. Let's get the analysis with Anurag Rana of Bloomberg Intelligence. So that was the chronology, right? Bloomberg had reported there were talks. Then Bloomberg had reported that they had cooled specifically over price as the sticking point. And now Informatica has been forced, I guess, to come out and say no talks. But I don't think many people really understood the deal anyway, Anurag.
Yeah, no, we are happy there is no deal for Salesforce sake. I mean, Informatica is not growing at that same rate as Salesforce is. And, you know, we are happy with the way what Salesforce has done over the last 12 to 24 months, stayed away from deals, focused on margins, focused on organic growth rate. And I hope for their sake they stick to that, at least for the near term, because as you remember, this was the biggest criticism for Salesforce for several years, that they move into slightly profitable territory and then they'll go out and buy something big. And then, you know, shareholders don't get the benefit of the leverage that comes from a SaaS model.
To that end, well, this was going to be the biggest deal since all the way back to Slack being bought for $27 billion. I'm interested, therefore, what is it that they just wanted to add? And what would you like them to add organically, if not inorganically?
Okay. Yeah, see, one of the things is Salesforce has no shortage of, I would say, opportunities in the long run. They have a massive customer base on sales automation and customer service. A lot of that, what they have to do is make sure these products work well. Now, when they were looking at buying Informatica, they actually bought a company called MuleSoft a few years ago that does some stuff that's very similar to Informatica. Informatica is slightly larger than MuleSoft when it comes to that. But honestly, they just reported, Salesforce reported that MuleSoft grew 22% the last time we had their numbers. That's a massive growth rate for a company internally, what they're doing on data management. Informatica, on the other hand, if you look at consensus, is growing at 6-7%. So from our side, I was surprised that they're even, you know, considering at this point, given all the opportunities they have organically.
Anurag, so great to always get your perspective on why perhaps you like the idea that M&A isn't going thick and fast over at CRM. Anurag Rana, we thank you. Bloomberg Intelligence, all things Salesforce, all things, well, busy, busy Monday day. We're talking TikTok, we're talking legal, regulatory issues, we're talking your big take, which is a must-read, Ed.
Yeah, and it's all happening at once. I think it's going to be a massive week. You know, earnings start in earnest. Tesla, massive, obviously. But the show was an important way to start the week. So recap on the podcast. We're really grateful. So many of you are listening to the show as a podcast on your way to work, your way home, wherever you are in the world. You can get it on Apple, Spotify, and iHeart. We do have a big week. So from New York City and San Francisco, join us for the next 4 days. This is Bloomberg Technology.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.